welcome to episode number 33 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. So in this episode, I talk to the one and only Grammy-winning guitar virtuoso, Frank Gambale. Frank is an inspired songwriter. He's got over 250 songs published. He's got over 20 albums. His music touches many styles from rock, funk, jazz, R&B, some Latin, and also some Brazilian influences. Now, Frank was pretty much the one who originated the sweep picking technique. So it's called the Gambale sweep picking technique. So in this interview, we go into how that all come about. So we also talk about how he first started playing guitar and up to now with his online guitar courses, which are amazing. So make sure you head on over to frankgambaleonlineguitarschool.com and check out all the different videos and packages and things he has. So for myself, I've always played like blues rock guitar. I started going through his course, Spicing Up the Blues, and just opened up a whole new vocabulary in guitar playing. So he has a few different courses on his site. Yeah, Spicing Up the Blues, the Definitive Sweep Picking Course, and Target Tones. So if you do check out his site, have a look at the bundles packs where you get some great offers. So for example, you can download the album backing track bundle, which is 10 albums minus lead guitar. Or you can also get his ebooks, which are all of his tab and notation of his albums transcribed. So all the tracks you'll be hearing in this podcast are by Frank, and some of the tracks are from some of his newer albums with Soul Mine. Now, Frank has also been part of Chick Corea's band and Vital Information, plus lots of other things that he's done over the years. So I really hope you enjoy this interview. I know I definitely learned a lot out of it. Now, before we get into the interview with Frank, please check out my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com, where you can check out all the videos from the people that have been on my podcast and find out who's coming up. You can also go to my shop page and check out my different memberships for the lessons and my book. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please feel free to become a patron. So let's go over now to the interview with Frank Gambale. Well, thanks for doing this.
You're welcome, mate.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. No worries.
So when you very first started, how old you were and what made you get into guitar?
Oh, boy, that was a long time ago. I started when I was about 7 years old, I guess. I had two older brothers, and both of them were playing guitar and learning guitar, so I just wanted to be like them.
Yep.
And I kind of was lucky in the sense that they were listening to music that I probably would never have listened to as a seven-year-old, so they influenced me with a lot of blues and pop stuff that was a little more adventurous because they were kind of ready for it. You know, it was John Mayall and Hendrix, of course, and usual blues and rock guys and Beatles and yeah. Crosby, Stills, Nash and all this stuff that was happening at the time and Eagles, early Eagles. And that was all very inspirational. I wanted to play. I loved it. I was having a good time learning.
Yeah. So you pretty much learned from your brothers?
Well, we all sort of were learning at our own speed. We would learn from each other a little bit, but I was spending more time than they were, really transcribing by ear off of records, off of vinyls. I thought that was terrific. You know, and now looking back, I realize that was the best way to learn because you're going straight to the source.
Yep.
A transcription is one thing, but you got to hear the actual recording to get the real nuance of all the subtleties, the bends and the tremolo and the phrasing and all that stuff. So yeah. It was great way to learn.
Yeah, oh, good. So how'd you go about the theory? So did you just pretty much teach yourself that as you were learning the songs?
Well, I was, you know, just like everybody, I was trying to piece it together. And as I have a really big course coming shortly on my online school, Harmony and Theory course.
Okay.
At the beginning, I always explain that there's a lot of holes in your playing. If you're, you know, we get a bit of information here, a bit there, and it's kind of scattered. And we try to make sense of it all as we go.
Yeah.
I know it was the first 8 years I was sort of in that state, trying to figure it out. I didn't really sit down and formally study any kind of theory, but I wish I had. It would have probably gotten me along a little quicker. But after about 8 years, I went to a little seminar in a music store in Canberra, and only three guitar players showed up. It was George Gola, very famous Australian jazz guitar player.
Okay.
And I was about 13 at the time, and the two other players that were there were beginners, and I was into it for about 7 years at that point, 6 or 7 years, and I was full of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I had a laundry list of questions for the poor guy. I wore him out. What get to play on this? Why do you play what are these notes? What's this chord called? You know, when do you use this chord? You know, it was just endless barrage of questions. And by the time he was finished, he couldn't wait to run away. I was taking copious notes. He really laid a ton of stuff on me.
Mm.
And I was very thankful for that. And then I started figuring out things from there. When I was 16, I had about 40 guitar students privately.
Yep.
And so I was, you know, in that 3 or 4 year period, I really figured out a lot of stuff, definitely made sense of it,
yeah.
And was figuring out ways to describe it to other people in an easy way that they could really get it. And I guess it worked because I ended up with so many students. So I had to be very organized to teach many, you know.
Mm.
In a week. It was a lot of work, but it was terrific. There's an Einstein quote that says, if you can't explain something simply, then you don't understand it well enough yourself. And I agree wholeheartedly with that statement.
Yeah.
So I learned how to say complex things in a simple way and to fill in all the holes. I can listen to someone play, and in about a minute, I can figure out how much they don't know.
Yeah.
And so I try to get people back to the fundamentals and build a good foundation before they move forward, you know.
Mm. So I think I saw an interview, you're about 16, and you're playing around Canberra 6 nights a week?
Yeah, actually when I was about 13.
Oh, 13.
My older brother Nuns was really good at getting gigs.
Mm.
He's still the smartest reference person I go to all the time, you know. You may have known him from Pro Audio. He started Pro Audio.
Oh, really?
Back in the...
Yeah, I'm in Pro Audio.
My family owned that business.
Oh, well. Okay.
They sold it maybe 20 years ago to the biggest competitor.
Yep.
And we had gigs. I was playing a lot. In fact, I don't remember most of the first half of my day at high school because I was always getting in really late. We'd play a gig in Goulburn or Queen Bien, or it was just... the surrounding area, all the clubs, we were playing them all.
Mm.
And great. It was terrific. I was really getting my skills together, you know, playing a lot.
And did you perform around Australia as well, or just mainly Canberra?
Well, we did go as far as Cairns. I remember we had some six-week stints. I was in my probably around 20 years old at that point. We had a band that was traveling. Yeah, we played some gigs in Sydney.
Yep.
And I loved those 6 week stint in Cairns because it's such a beautiful place. And we would play 6 nights a week, 6 hours a night.
Oh, wow.
Half hour on, half hour off with the disco.
Yep.
And it was when disco was really popular, you know, it was when it was really first hitting. And most of the groups didn't want to play that stuff.
Yeah.
They were sort of rebelling against it. And we loved it. I loved Earth, Wind, and Fire and all that stuff. We tried to find all the best funk players, and we would just play those tunes, and people loved it. I played a lot of rock and blues and country and all that stuff, and in this case, it was a lot of disco music and funk.
Yep.
So it was great. I spent several years of my life in each phase of those musical styles, and I think it was a good way to become an all-rounder, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, it's very rare you see that these days. You know, people have got their one particular style and they stick to it.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like having one flavor of ice cream the rest of your life. You know, I like to mix it up.
Yeah, no, that's good. So that led to your GIT. Did you see that in the guitar magazine in Australia or did you hear from it somebody else?
We were avid Guitar Player magazine readers,
yep.
Albeit 3 months later than the issue date. But
yeah, that's right.
It was great. I first saw the school advertised, and my brother Nunzio was getting out of the music business and into the music selling business, you know, selling instruments.
Yep.
So he did a real great reconnaissance in America. He started the first mail order in Australia, but he became part of a collective. But anyway, on his way through L.A., on the way back, he stopped in at GIT and handed in my audition tape.
Yep.
And had a look around. You know, I said, you know, let me know what you think. And he came back and says, you got to go. It's awesome there. There's players everywhere, like-minded people going there, and it's an incredible environment.
Mm.
And he was right. So it took me about another year and a half before I could pull together the money to go. But I was about 22, yep. And I remember it was September 82 when I left.
And did you have to audition for that?
Well, I didn't find out till later, but, you know, if you had the money, you could go.
Oh, really?
You know? Well, schools are generally like that, you know. Yeah. You know, there's 5% of the people that go that are really serious about having a career in music, and the rest are either just curious or just want a year off or just want to spend some time around musicians.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and realize halfway through, well, maybe I better stick to my day job kind of thing, you know. So it takes all kinds to fill up a music school. But generally speaking, it's only a small percentage that go on to actually have a full-time career.
Yeah.
My audition tape was pretty cool.
Yep.
I'd been writing for many years, and I'd written some pretty cool tunes, and they could hear I could play. So it was great. I got to meet a lot of people, and I can draw a direct line from there to many of my best opportunities that came along.
Yeah. So when did you first write the book for the Sweet Picking?
It was while I was a student at GIT.
Oh, okay.
In the first year I was there, somewhere between 82 and 83.
Yep.
And as soon as I graduated the following September, they offered me a job, and they also offered me a book deal through REH Publications.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Because they were getting a lot of books done from the instructors at the school time, and the school had a great reputation, as it well deserved at that time. It was a fantastic, still is a great school,
yeah.
But it's changed tremendously. The focus, you know, there was a lot of great classic jazz players, fusion players, and all that kind of stuff, as well as rock players and blues players at the time. It felt more rounded, and anyway, it was great. And I wrote the book while I was still a student because I was trying to practice, you know. I was really getting my sweep stuff together. I'd been sort of discovered sweep in my early teens.
Yeah.
And people would always say, what the heck? How did you do that? What? You know, I'd be trying to practice. I go, look, I was giving away manuscripts the whole time I was at GIT after I wrote it. I said, this is what I do. Now let me practice, you know.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I had published.
So with the speed picking, to get the idea, did you get that through, like, studying people like Chick Corea and, you know, those type of artists? Or how did it all come about?
Well, the technique, there was a lot of things pointing me in that direction, you know. There was a lot of, it was like clues. I felt like, you know, Sherlock Holmes, having to pick up little pieces of clues that a few people were doing the tiny bit of it, you know. But it wasn't really, it wasn't a method, and it wasn't fully explored.
Yep.
And there were several reasons, in my opinion. One of the biggest reasons was that, generally speaking, most people thought it was impossible to do it in time.
Yep.
And I'll admit it is extremely hard to do it in time and swing with it or play rock or blues and stay, really phrase it in time, stay right on the pulse. And so that kept a lot of people, most people, away.
Mm.
But, you know, I knew it was hard, but as a kid, I was pretty naive. I thought, nah, it can't be that. It can't be impossible, you know.
Yeah.
Hard, yeah, but not impossible, you know. Blind faith there. I just kept plunging along, you know. And, yeah, when I wrote the book, I was already well on my way. And I organized my thoughts, and I revealed all the basic, the fundamental stuff for sweet picking in that book.
Yep.
And then later, shortly later, when I did a video for ECI, which became Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were, they still go on selling today, those books. It's incredible to me, the books and videos. Yeah, that's because it's the definitive method.
Yeah, that's right, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, cause there's heaps of different videos and books out there, but like you said, you're like the first one to come about it, really, and I guess people want to learn from the original person who did it.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I've seen is derivative of my work. I don't see any boundaries being pushed beyond what I did with it. So, And recently for my online school, I just did a major update. Because it was middle 80s when I did that work, and then I've discovered tons of stuff since then. And I wanted to have a lengthy, deep course on it. I've restated all the fundamental stuff and then added tons of my new discoveries into this. And it's called the Definitive Sweet Picking Course.
Okay.
And it's great. It's been very popular. It really brought forward right up to date, right up to now, the discoveries I've made, which I'm really happy to have documented, you know?
Yeah, that's excellent. So after your time at GIT, that was 4 years, wasn't it, that course?
It was 1 year.
Right, only 1 year.
And I think it's longer than that now, but at the time it was only 1 year. I graduated and they offered me a job right away. They were offering their top students jobs because the school was growing so fast and they needed teachers. So the obvious choices were students that had been through the program and were good players, and so I ended up teaching there for 4 more years until I vanished into the universe there.
Well, that sort of answers my next question, because I was going to ask you, like, after the course, did you ever consider coming back to Australia, or was it just because of a teaching job, that was it?
Well, I knew Australia was always there. One of the biggest reasons for going was to just see how well I fit out there on the larger scale, on the world scale. To me, LA, all my favorite music was coming out of LA at the time, and I just wanted to be close to the action.
Yeah.
I mean, I could never have done what I did sitting in my bedroom in Canberra.
That's right.
My path might have gone completely differently had I gone to Sydney instead of LA.
Yeah.
You know, established myself in Sydney, I may have ended up in one of the huge pop groups at all. At that time, there was a 30 pop groups from Australia that all did big business internationally. And who knows? My life would have taken a different course at that point, because I was way into pop. I'm still into pop.
Yeah.
I love the music. So, but I have no regrets. I've really done a lot of amazing things. I've been really blessed in that sense. I was already playing a lot in LA. I'd already had 2 albums out when I met Chick Corea.
Mm.
And before that, it was that famous Charles Ponty, the French violinist, who was really big at the time. And I remember auditioning for him and getting that gig. And then soon after getting the audition for Chick as well. And Chick, at the time, was one of my big heroes. You know, I had discovered his music in my early teens also, and I had to pinch myself to get an audition, let alone get the gig, you know.
Yeah.
You know, his playing just freaking me out. It was just so magical. The notes, I just couldn't believe the notes he was playing. So I had to learn them on guitar.
Yeah.
And I often credit him and Mike Brecker, the saxophonist, for helping me create this sweet picking technique, because if I listen to a guitar player, I can tell you exactly what they're playing. I can tell you what string or even what finger.
Yeah.
I know the guitar that well. But if someone's playing a line on a keyboard or a saxophone, there's no prerequisite. You know, there's no predetermined way to play it. And the phrases lay so differently on guitar than they do on keyboard or saxophone.
Yeah.
So it really, there were certain phrases I was desperate to play, and I had to really find a method to be able to play those notes.
Mm.
And that really pushed the issue for me, you know, pushed the discovery forward, yeah. You know.
I know you've done a few reunions with Chick Corea over the years. Like, I think you did one in 2002.
Yeah, we broke up in 2002. I went off and did my own stuff because I wanted to get back to my music. And in 02, yeah, we got together again for a reunion, which lasted about 3 years and one new record.
Mm.
And then, you know, every couple of years he calls us for more. And last year we did a whole lot. We went right around the world again last year. And actually, in 2011, I did the Return to Forever tour, replacing Al Di Meola. So we played in Australia, even. That was where the tour started. We played to a full house in, at the Sydney Opera House, etc. That was quite a hit for me,
yeah.
As well as other great venues in Australia, before we kicked off around the world. So it, for me, I jumped a generation there, but no, I was happy to do that too.
Yeah. So do you get much time to come back down to Australia?
Not as much as I'd like, but I've been there. I used to go back when my parents were alive. Obviously, when they go, it sort of slows down the will to want to go.
Yeah.
My dear brother Nunzio, who's doing very well in the tech industry, started a company that he'll probably be like Bill Gates in the next 2 years. His high-tech company is just going gangbusters.
Oh, well.
But so I visit him every now and then, especially when I'm playing in Australia. I'll take an extra week and go see him.
Yeah.
But I see him a lot. He comes over to LA a lot on business. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so now it pretty much leads us up to your online guitar school, which I've had a look at, and it's fantastic. The thing I really like about it is, you know, it caters for everyone. Like, you get your country players, your classical players, your rock players, metal players, anything. Anyone gets something out of your course, which is really good.
Great. Yeah, well, we're just scratching the surface. This year I'm going to put pedal to the metal and really deliver a lot of new stuff. I want to have lots of courses up there that will cater to everybody and everything. You know?
Yeah.
It's great to have a forum. I'm very excited that I can go straight to the audience. And the audience is there. I've been touring for 35 years, so the name recognition is definitely out there in the world. And
yeah.
I'm always gratified. You know, you've got students studying in the Maldives and Iceland and Russia and Brazil. It's wild, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's great. And I want to be able to offer these courses to people who could never afford to go to Berkeley or anything like that, who could pay $32,000 a semester. I don't know how they're surviving, honestly. I mean, it's just incredibly expensive for people.
Mm.
And for a couple of $100, they can buy a course on my site and learn an awful lot of stuff, way more affordable in their own time and from the comfort of their home. So there's a lot said. Anyway, I've wanted to offer a school for the longest time, and so I'm very happy that that's underway. And my partner is a brilliant, you know, I basically just deliver content. We film it twice a year. We get together for 10 days, and we blast for 10 days. And he takes it from there, and he does the marketing and the editing and puts it all together, and I approve it, and away it goes. And, it's terrific. But I'm still an artist too. My first love is still being an artist.
Yeah.
And just finished a new record with my Soul Mind group, which I'm very excited about. We've just signed a pretty good with a great company, actually, that's been responsible for launching some very big careers in the guitar world. And so they're mad about the record. So we'll see what happens. This year, I really want to take the music to the max, too.
Yeah.
And I think this record will cross over. It's a vocal album, you know. Yeah. The last two records I've done have been old songs. And singing again, I've got back into my singing, which I always did in my groups in Australia.
Yeah.
Every group I ever had in Australia, I was either the lead singer or one of the main singers singing harmonies. And I've missed that. I've missed it terribly. So I'm happy to have a new group that's fulfilling all those pleasures for me, you know, of harmonies and songs.
Yeah.
With still plenty of guitar. My guitar fans will still be happy with it. So it's just fun stuff.
Yeah, that's good. So when's that going to be released?
Second half of the year is what I'm told. The label gives them plenty of time to do the build-up, you know.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
And you still got all your other albums available on your site or iTunes, wherever?
Yeah, all over. Wherever digital sales are, you know.
Yeah.
20 solo albums, something like that. Mm. And about 20 with the group Vital Information. Also some special projects that I did in the past with Steve Smith and Sue Ham called GHS, Gambali Ham Smith.
Okay.
We did three records there, among others, you know.
Yeah.
The main biography, I guess, discography.
Yeah, oh, that'd be good. I didn't know about the GHS one, so check that out.
Oh, man, you won't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Those are really no holds barred there.
Yeah, because I've heard you about the Vital Information. Yeah, some of the solo things.
Mm-hmm.
So how long ago was that, the GHS?
That was probably early 2000, somewhere around there. We did three records, and they're outstanding records.
Yeah.
Well, I feel that way about all my records, but those ones had, for guitar fans, for guys that are really into fusion, those were heavy fusion records.
Yeah, so for people to get onto your online guitar school, let's just go to your website.
Yeah, Frank Gambali, onlineguitarschool.com.
Yeah.
Or there's a link on my cover page at frankgambali.com.
Okay, yeah. Well, they're pretty much all the main questions I had for you. And just to find out more about the online guitar school, which I'm sure a lot of people will get great things out of.
Yeah. And I hope it helps you too.
Yeah, for sure.
Your own stuff that you're doing too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always played blues rock, but I was watching some of your introductions to the blues ones that you did, the Spicing Up the Blues.
Right.
And there's a lot of great stuff in there. So I was actually thinking for myself, doing a little video of my playing, just improvising, and then doing another video after I do your course and see the difference. Before and after type thing.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, so I might do that.
Right. Well, you know, it starts simple, but then it gets really interesting, you know. I've played blues for a lot of years, and when I first started the school, I wanted to do something that was going to pull people in, so I thought a blues course.
Mm.
I'm not known as a blues guitar player, but I definitely have blues roots. First 10 years of my playing was only blues.
Yeah.
So I feel like I can really express myself in a blues way. And so as I started to get back into it was kind of like what I was talking about before, going back to the fundamentals, you know, just going back to my roots. And I feel my playing is, you know, to go back to it now, I've gained a lot from doing it. My time feel and expression, just I just love blues, and I love blues-based guitar players. But I don't like to ever let go of my intellect, too. So that was, of course, perfect course where I start people out, and you know, even a beginner could do this course for the first couple of sections, and then I introduce stuff that maybe a lot of blues players wouldn't ever think to do in a blues. So I really, that's spicing the part.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, just those little parts I've seen, it's been great. So,
all right,
thanks, Frank.
You're welcome, mate.
And hopefully I'll talk to you again soon.
Kiss the ground then for me.
I will, for sure. All right. Thanks, Frank. See you later.
Go, mate. Bye-bye.
So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Frank. So make sure you join me next week with my interview with Nick Halleck. So until next week, keep jamming.